Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We have Kobe Carlson on this week, and he's killed some really big bucks in Colorado. He guides full-time, and he just knows a lot about big deer, so I think there's a lot to learn from him and some cool stories to be heard. Before we start, I just want to let you guys know we have some stuff on our store now. It's dirtygiantshop.com. I'm doing a giveaway. I'm trying to raise some money to get better podcast equipment and kind of up the game a little bit. I want Dirty Giants podcast to be even bigger in 2026. So we're giving away a dual spotter, the Koas with the Atom adapters. It's the TSN 664M, and then one of the sides will have the Zoom eye coupling that you can switch out on that. It's the big eyes at Iron, and they're super sweet. They're fun to use. I love being able to use both eyes, and I just feel like it makes me a better glasser. So if you want to support the Dirty Giants podcast, it means a lot. You can go on there. There's different ticket packages. You can buy one ticket, three ticket. There's a five ticket package. It comes with a exclusive hat, and then a 10 ticket package that comes with exclusive hoodie. And the only way to get those hats or hoodies is through this giveaway. We won't make any of that particular hat or hoodie again. So if you want to jump in on there, I appreciate any support that you guys give me. It means a lot. But let's go ahead and get into the podcast. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We got Kobe Carlson on this week, and I'm really excited to talk to Kobe because he's like been on a lot of big deer in Colorado, and he's killed a few himself. It seems like he really knows what he's doing. And with third and fourth seasons coming up in Colorado, and just rut hunts around the state, I mean around the whole West, it's kind of fun to talk about, and I think there's a lot to learn from Kobe. So I appreciate you getting on and being willing to kind of share some stuff with us and maybe share some stories too.
Absolutely, dude. I'm always happy to talk mule deer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's fun to talk about. And we kind of chatted a little bit before the podcast started, and I can tell you know your stuff and you're passionate about mule deer. So I think it's going to be fun, and I think there's a lot to learn. So maybe before we get into hunting deer, let's just like hear a little bit about you and what you do. And I guess just a little bit about yourself, Kobe.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Kobe Carlson. I'm from Northern Utah. I've been full-time guide really for the past 6 years for mainly deer and elk and a little bit of sheep. I frame houses in the off season, and pretty much all I think about is mule deer. So I think we'll have a lot to talk about. I'm excited.
Yeah. And you've been on some awesome bucks and even some bucks that you've chased like year to year, and you just seem to get it done every season, and I think that's what kind of sets people apart. Like I'm going through your Instagram, and every year there's multiple good bucks that you've either killed or been a big part of, and I think that's what sets the good people apart from the great. So I just wanted to kind of pick your brain about hunting the rut and how you go about it. I know you've hunted a few different units in Colorado, so
maybe we'll kind of like do a scenario. Like, let's say you draw a Colorado tag, like a unit you're not super familiar with, how you go about that before the season starts, and then maybe like once the season starts, and then kind of how you hunt it.
Okay, yeah. So before the season, I absolutely, and I tell guys this all the time, get in the truck in the summer and go for a drive. You're not going to see, you know, bucks aren't going to see be in the same places that they are going to be in November, but you're learning the roads. You're learning where the gas station is. You're learning where you want to camp. All that stuff is so important. It saves you the first 2 days of your hunt from wasting time on the first couple days of your hunt, right? Mm-hmm. And when I get to the unit, say I'm hunting third season here that starts a week from now, I'll kind of do the same thing over again, rinse and repeat, fuel that truck up every day and drive. Don't take the same road twice and just cover country, because Colorado's funny. You'll find pockets that are full of deer, and you'll go 2 miles away and you'll see country that looks the exact same, and it's just completely empty. Like, there's no deer.
Yeah.
So you really just have to, and I hate the term road hunting, but Colorado's almost that way. The more country you can cover, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah. And I think there's a few things just right there that you said that are really important to keep in mind. And it's just covering the numbers. Like, I think Jason Carter always says is like, it's a numbers game. Like, there, you just gotta
absolutely,
like, just find as many groups of doe, especially during that season when they're rutting, and just cover those numbers. Like you said,
I mean, if I pack in somewhere, you know, try to be a badass on the mountain and pack in, I might find, you know, $5 in one basin. Whereas if I drive 40 miles in a day, I might see $30, and odds are one of those bucks is going to be really good.
Yeah. And that time of year, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, but like, I've seen big, big deer, like mature deer, make mistakes, and you're like, there's no way this buck should be off the road. Or even if you have to hike up to a quick glassing point, spend 30 minutes there and glass.
Yeah.
Like, no way this buck's here. Like, there's people everywhere, but they could just make a little error, and like,
yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing you said, and we actually kind of talked about this before the podcast. I was asking you about a unit, and I've talked to a few people who's hunted it, and like, some people are like, "Man, I didn't even see a buck the whole hunt, or saw a couple like small bucks." And then you're like, "Oh no, I saw a few better bucks," and it's just like, like you said, this, you're in the same area or the same unit, but you have a completely different experience, and you're there the same year. And I think a lot of that has to do, like, you have to be patient and glass, but you also have to cover a lot of the unit, because like, some parts like are almost not even going to have deer, and then some parts are like rutting grounds where you might just find a special buck.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, you know, drive around and just look out the window the whole time. Park the truck, go for a 10-minute walk, mm-hmm. work the rim, put your binos on a tripod and work some country for, you know, 20, 30 minutes at a time, but don't sit there all day.
Yeah, I think it's 100% opposite of what you would do like on an early season hunt, where you have a specific buck you're hunting and you're sitting on the same glassing knoll every day for 12, 14 hours. Like, obviously we're talking rut hunting here, where you're just trying to find the buck and where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely. And you never know, it might be 20 yards off the road in a corner, and there he is, right? After, you might go 5 days and not see nothing, and then boom, he shows up. So, it's just so random.
Yeah, yeah, like we were talking about, like it could just happen anytime and anywhere too. So let's kind of talk about this scenario. Like, it happened to me a few years ago. I found this big buck. Like, I thought he was over 200, and it was the night before the season. I thought I was going to wake up and, and kill him off this doe group, and then he just never showed back up. Like, what are you doing if you're scouting, driving the unit a day or two before the season, you see this buck rutting a doe that you would love to kill? Are you sticking, like, right there, or are you still covering numbers, or what's your opinion on that?
If it's a buck of that caliber, I'm probably not going to go look for other bucks, right? Because, I mean, that's the one. You know, the odds of me finding another buck mm-hmm. in this unit without any, you know, local knowledge is low. Right. But I would probably get out of there, because it is Colorado and there's people all over. So to not draw attention to the area. But, yeah, I can't think of anything else I would have done different. Maybe get on a track if you can track in that country, but some of that country is just so, I don't know if we're talking high elevation or low, but
yeah,
it's just random. I think, I don't know. I can't say I would have done anything different.
Yeah. I think like you kind of said, like you find a buck that you would love to shoot of that caliber, like we're talking about, like it's hard to go anywhere else in the unit and think you're going to find something similar to a deer like yeah. that. And then you said, like, not draw attention to the area. I think that's something that's a little overlooked, and you can do certain things to not do that. If you see someone parked at the same spot, especially, like, someone you oh, know, yeah. like,
yep.
that's killing big deer, it's going to bring attention to the spot, and, like, obviously there's something good there if someone's spending a lot of time there. So you're going to maybe want to go in different spots, or how do you go about that?
Yeah, try to, you can go to the same spot maybe, but I don't know if you're with a buddy, either get dropped off, or maybe you hit a little bit different vantage point looking into the same country, or you do what I do and trade your truck in every other year so nobody remembers your truck.
No, that's smart. And I think it's worth it a lot of the times, especially like you, how you're guiding hunts and you have a little bit of notoriety and you're continually killing big animals. If someone's like, okay, Kobe's parked right here, there's got to be something good. Even if you're just scouting, like yeah. people are going to remember that and mark that, and then all of a sudden they're going to start checking that spot. And it just
the sad thing is,
people.
9 times out of 10, that spot's probably a bust, and I'm not seeing anything there either.
Right? Yeah, for sure. So, sorry, I kind of deteriorated, went a different direction. But so now, that's kind of how you scout the area. And then are you breaking it down? So you're scouting, and you're like, okay, these areas are where I've seen deer, and that's where you focus on the hunt. Or once the hunt starts, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm going to drive, cover country, find out where our doe groups are. And then a lot of times I like to kind of divide a unit up, like elevation wise. Like I might go high the first day, and then, you know, if I'm not seeing enough deer to make me want to stay, then okay, I'm going to drop down 1,000 feet and hunt the mid country. And if that doesn't work, then I'll drop down the low country or the river bottom or something like that. Or it help. Obviously, it helps a lot if you have help. You know, you can send guys to other parts of the unit.
Yeah.
Mostly, I tend to break it up and usually start high. Obviously, unless there's, you know, a good storm and there's 3 feet of snow up high, then I won't even waste my time, and I'll just start low.
Okay.
But kind of just break it up. Do the best you can to make a big unit smaller, you know, make it more manageable.
Yeah. And then you said if you have help, you're sending them different ways. So let's say you have a buddy or two, and they each have their own vehicle. You're sending them to completely different parts of the unit, or are you sending them like just different, like just so they're close enough, if they find something they can call you, or how are you going about that?
If we have no idea, like we don't have a buck in mind, or we aren't sure where we're going, I'll just send guys to other parts of the unit. I'm pretty lucky. I have really good buddies that are big deer killers themselves. So I trust them to, you know, just say, hey, go on your own, go do good things, right? And
yeah.
report back. I mean, if we're looking for a certain buck, then we'll kind of stay within that, you know, 1 to 2 square mile area and just hit different knobs and maybe switch in the middle of the day. So one guy isn't looking at the same patch of cedar trees the whole day, right?
right.
But yeah, just kind of split it up the best you can. And especially in Colorado, it's not always possible because you're dealing with so much private land and some units that you really, he might be only, you know, 500 yards away, but looking at completely different country, you might be on the only section of public land that you really can hunt in that whole unit.
That makes sense. So I know we've kind of talked tactics now a little bit and where you would go, but let's jump into a story here. So just last year, right? You killed a good buck in Colorado. Do you mind telling us that story, kind of going into it and some of the stuff you did to do that?
Yeah, for sure. So I had a low point draw tag last year. And that's another thing in Colorado I think people are doing wrong. There's no reason you should have more than 4 deer points in your pocket at a time. Freaking burn those things. Mm-hmm. But anyway, sorry for the side tangent.
No, that makes sense.
So we showed up. It was a third season tag. We showed up the night before, went scouted, drove around, saw a couple nice bucks, nothing that, you know, was really worth shooting. And opening day came around, and I send my dad to a glassing knob that we like. It is a unit we had hunted before, and I went to a completely different end of the unit. And he calls me about 30 minutes into daylight. Like, hey, got a pretty good buck over here. I think you should take a look at.
Yeah.
So I get over there, and it looks like a really good buck. It's over 30 inches wide, you know, but he's kind of, it's snow, real blizzard, snowing. I can't really make out what he is. And he's posturing with another buck. And he looks like a really good buck. There's two of them. Eventually the snow clears up, and one is a really nice 4-point, not super heavy, but he's got like an 8-inch cheater off one side, like a kind of like a corkscrew thing.
Yeah.
And the other one's just, he's like a 30-inch wide 3-point.
No way.
Yeah. So it's like immediately like tough decision, right?
Yeah.
So I get in there, like, I'll shoot either one of these things probably. Get in there, and I don't know what happened. If some other hunters pushed him, but the deer start running. He grabs some does on his way down the canyon, and they head off, and they're down in the private for the rest of the day.
Uh-huh.
So that afternoon, I found a way I could get in from, like, kind of in between two sections of private and just kind of wait for him to come back up. And I'm working along, kind of in the river bottoms, actually heading up towards this rim rock mesa, the 30-inch wide 3-point steps out. I had this deer at 70 yards for probably an hour.
No way.
Conley, I couldn't get myself to do it because I don't know if you've seen, I don't know if I even posted it, but I've got a really big 3-point already.
Yeah. And you're just like, no.
He makes me sad almost every time I look at him because I just wish he was a 4-point.
Yeah.
He'd be a really big deer if he was a 4-point.
So you're just having a stare down with a 30-inch 3-point at 70 yards.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, forever, I can't do it.
I can't do this. It's only the first day of third season. This is going to be great. We're going to kill a giant. You know, I'm stoked. Like, it can only get better from here, right?
Yeah, these are the first two bucks you've seen, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And then, anyway, I hold off. And so the next day, we kind of do the same thing. Like, okay, there's mature bucks down here. There's does. these does are probably hot or these bucks wouldn't be on them like that. So we kind of going to go find the same group of deer and hope a bigger one has moved in.
Yeah.
I work in through the same way through the bottom. I got my uncle and my dad on two different glassing knobs kind of across the canyon from each other.
Uh-huh.
And, uncle hits me up. He's like, hey, I'm videoing a pretty good buck right now. He's, you know, 25, 26 wide, deep fork, 4-point, pushing does. Like, oh boy, here we go. Yeah. Got another decision to make. So, and I mean, at this point, I'm like kind of pissed at myself. I didn't shoot the 30-incher. And so I get to working up and he's like, oh, he's right there. Just right in that pocket of cedars out in the middle of the sage flat. Like you can't miss him. But I'm down where the deer is. So I'm on the same elevation. I can't see him.
Okay.
So I'm laying there for probably 45 minutes before this thing comes out. And I have my 15s on my tripod and my 12s in my bino holster, right? So I should have been using the 12s. Yeah. I'll say that. I'm laying there on my knees waiting for this buck to come out, and I'm only 300 yards away, and I see him come out, and I've got my freaking 15s on him. He looks like a giant. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he's a great buck, don't get me wrong, but I honestly thought he was way bigger than he is.
Uh-huh.
But 15's up close.
Yeah, I've done that.
Recipe for bad things, right?
Right.
So I mean, kind of a boring story. I mean, he came out and shot him right there dead. His first deer I ever killed on my birthday, so that was kind of cool.
But, oh, nuh-uh. A birthday buck.
Yeah, that was – he's a good buck, but I honestly thought he was a lot bigger than he is.
Yeah.
You got to be careful with how you're – you got to really judge him when you're close with a pair of 15s.
Yeah, and I feel like I don't know about you, but like typical bucks are just so hard to judge sometimes, especially with 15s at close range.
A typical 4-point is the hardest thing to judge.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because like you just misjudge that main beam or the G2 just a little bit. Like if you're like, oh, he has 18-inch twos, but really they're 15 or 16, and it just throws everything off.
Yeah, you think you're looking at a 25-inch beam, but really it's 18.
yeah, for sure. So then, the year before that, though, your uncle and your dad with you doubled up, right?
Yeah, yep. That was probably my favorite hunt I've ever had in Colorado.
Really?
Yeah, it was a freaking blast. We killed two great bucks in 2 days. And
In 2 days? How did that go down? Days. Tell us that story.
So it was actually in the same unit. We get there the night before the opener. My dad starts setting up the wall tent. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna go scout. Because we got there with maybe 20 minutes of light left.
Uh-huh.
So I go driving around, get to this rim, start working the rim, and right before dark, I see this buck. He's raking a tree. I'm like, I can't tell, you know, I can't tell points, but I can tell he's big frame, heavy, mature. Like, we got to find this sucker first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
So we wake up, we're all jazzed, and I go to that same glassing spot I was on the night before. My dad worked up through the bottom, and my uncle was on a different end of the unit looking for something else.
Uh-huh.
And just right in the gray light, I mean, before you can even see, you know, like that first 10 minutes where you can see deer, but you probably can't see them through your rifle scope.
Yeah. Like you can kind of just make out the shape of their body and be like, I think that's their rack, but yep.
And so he's in this yellow grass bedded with a doe. And with that yellow grass, I could see frame. Like,
yeah.
Looks like a giant. I mean, he's an awesome deer. So I hit my dad. I'm like, hey, he's a great buck. You might want to get up to that next rock, and he'll probably work too. He's going to push that doe. He's going to follow her wherever she goes. It was just the buck and the doe. They were separated from all the other deer.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember what I was doing, but I wasn't even paying attention. I might have been switching between binos and the spotting scope. And all of a sudden, I hear a gunshot.
No. Is your dad up there, or you think it's a... Okay. Sorry, I'll let you finish.
I thought it was somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, oh, crap. I was like, there's no way my dad got up there in time and saw this deer and shot it. Like, you could barely even see.
Uh-huh.
And so I start calling, like, did you shoot him? Or, like, what happened? Nothing. I'm getting worried. And all of a sudden, I get a text from him. And it's like, we're talking like 5 minutes into legal shooting. Like, I get a text up from him, and it's a big freaking rat sticking out of the safe.
No,
brush.
Are you kidding me?
So he shot that deer. I guess that deer tried to sneak away with his doe. They were going to kind of go out the bottom and separate themselves from all the other deer. And he shot him at 130 yards just offhand.
Nuh-uh. That is so interesting.
So in the time that it took me to switch from the 15s to the spotting scope, he got up and started to leave. And he walked right to my dad and he shot him.
That is crazy. I wonder how often they do that. Like, especially like the bigger deer. Because, I mean, you see a lot like... a little later in the day or even first light sometimes, like those younger bucks rutting the doe group, like just checking doe. But I wonder like how many times those big bucks, and I think like you've probably seen it, just kind of take one doe or two doe. And
you see the same thing with elk sometimes. They'll pull one cow and, you know, have one cow by themselves a couple hundred yards away. Like those big mature bulls, they don't really care to do the whole screaming, running around thing with all the other elk, right? They kind of do their own thing. I don't know. I think there's probably someone out there that knows a lot better than I do, but I think they do take a doe and go off somewhere by themselves for a day.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense, because if not, they're just standing with all the deer and
they're
probably going to get killed anyway. So it's like if it's a mature buck, he probably has a few little tricks like that he's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're... Using. They're dumb, but they're not that dumb, especially if they're older.
Yeah. So what was this buck?
He's a mid-80s buck. I'd have to look at a score sheet. He's super heavy. I mean, probably one of the heaviest deer I've ever seen, but he's got these, I don't know what it's called. You know, like when you grab their bases and it like hurts your hand almost.
Yeah, like all those little small points.
Just wicked gnarly bases, 2.5-3 inch eye guards, giant beams, stud deer.
Oh man, that's awesome! And so you guys kill that deer. You don't have a tag at all, but your uncle has a tag.
Correct. Yeah. So now my uncle's got a tag, and he's got my dad and myself looking for him for the next 5 days. So we're kind of doing the same thing. Just at this point, like, we think we've killed the only mature buck that's in this canyon, right? So we kind of hit some new country for a day.
Wait, pause real quick. So that buck you saw the night before, do you think it was the one your dad killed? Raking the trees?
I do. Yeah, okay. I think it was him. Yep.
Okay, sorry. I was just thinking that in my head, but go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're good. So we kind of think like, yeah, we probably killed the, you know, the breeder buck down here, right? And so we hit some new country. We go way up high, higher elevation. We don't really turn up nothing. We spend like a half a day. We thought we saw a big frame buck, tried to get close, and we spent half a day at like 300 yards from him, and he walks out of the trees and he's like a 20-inch 3x4. So kind of wasted a half day there. The next morning, we kind of were heading out. We drive past the canyon that my dad had killed his in, and there's does there's does right on the road, and they bail off into the canyon. I'm like, well, let's at least look. And we get out. Sure enough, there's another deep forked 4-point, and he's rutting does hard, but he's on the private. The bottom of the canyon was all private.
Okay.
So we kind of, we're trying to decide if he's a shooter or not. And my uncle's like, yeah, well, I think we should shoot this buck. He's about the same score wise. He's probably a high 70s buck.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if we ever got him scored or not, but just a deep fork, typical 4-point eye guards, exactly what you go to Colorado for.
Right.
And so me and my dad are sitting back a couple miles. We're like 2 miles away from this deer, and we can tell like he's a good deer. So my uncle gets in position. This deer walks, full on nose to ground, straight lining, looking for a doe, I guess, straight lines right to my uncle. And an hour later, he pile drives him at 300 yards.
No way.
Just stupid luck, man. That's why you hunt the rut.
So, if it's not secrets or anything, are you guys doing anything to pull them off of the private, or are you guys just patient enough that they just?
Yeah, we kind of just wait. The landowner tags down there in that particular section of private are a little too expensive for what we want to pay.
Right.
So we can't hunt the private, never have been able to hunt that section of private.
Uh-huh.
So we just kind of just wait. And there's enough does on the public that a buck like that, that's by himself looking, he's eventually going to walk over.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because how many times, it seems like Colorado's famous for this, at least like the units that I've hunted, like you just drive by the private and you're like, oh my gosh, like
yeah,
big deer, yeah. Big deer. And then,
oh, it absolutely happens. I mean, there's been a couple that have gotten away from us that got onto the private and you just can't do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can kind of just play that public private game a little bit. And if you're patient, eventually maybe they'll make a mistake.
Absolutely. Biggest deer I've probably ever seen did that same thing, but he stayed on the private for too long. Oh yeah. I mean, that was actually the same unit as the last two stories.
No way. Like how big are we talking now? You got me curious. Cause I know you've seen some big deer. Well,
biggest deer I've ever seen in Colorado.
Okay. Okay.
It was probably 220-ish. Probably mid-220s buck. That deer kind of got me hooked on mule deer.
Yeah.
On mature mule deer. We watched him. He bedded in a little patch of sage, and there was a sheep herder down there pushing his sheep out of the high country.
Yeah.
And that sheep herder pushed his herd of sheep within 5 yards of that buck, and he held tight and didn't
No
move.
Way.
Yep.
And is this so like in November? Like,
yeah, this was a rut hunt.
What?
Third season. This deer, I watched him, and I never thought that like animals could like, think, like reason.
Yeah.
Until this happened, you could visibly watch this deer lay his head flat on the ground, and he didn't move. That sheep herder rode past on his horse, not 10 feet away from him.
No way.
And the sheep dog actually passed him.
And then sheep dogs too. That's insane. Yeah,
so then what happened? He must have caught his wind or something, and he turned, whirled around and basically jumped on that deer. That deer didn't get up and run until that dog was like 2 feet from him.
That is crazy. That makes me wonder, because like you always hear stories like that, and like I've seen deer like just put their head straight on the ground and even kind of like turn it sometimes, like hiding.
Yep.
And I'm like, I wonder how many times I've walked past a big buck like that.
Dude, I don't even want to know.
And like the caliber of bucks, I mean, usually, at least the bucks I've seen do that, like, are mature, smart bucks. Or,
yeah.
Like, I mean, they obviously...
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, a young buck's probably going to get up and run and get shot at, right?
Right.
Where they've learned to just, if they hold tight, then you're probably not going to see them.
That's so cool. I love hearing things like that, just like... how smart some of these old mature bucks are. It just makes it that much cooler when you finally kill one and get to put your hands on it.
It's the best thing in the world.
So did that big buck that we're talking about, like, did he ever leave private?
No, we watched him for the next 7 days and he never left.
Really? How close would he get?
He would flirt with the boundary. He would get 40 yards, 50 yards from the boundary.
No way.
And it's like, I mean, it's like finger on the trigger. You're waiting for him to jump the fence.
Yeah.
And he never did.
Oh my gosh. That's insane. And like, I think it kind of goes back to what you were saying. Like, you should never have more than 4 points. 'Cause it's not like you're hunting the best unit in the state. Like, you're killing these deer and seeing that caliber of deer. And like, I don't know if I've seen like 220 bucks like that, but I've seen like multiple 200 inch type deer on 0-1, 2-point units.
Yeah. And there's years that the Gunnison Basin, they might kill one 200 incher. And then you got guys on, you know, second draw tags that they might pull 4 or 5 out of the unit that year. There's no reason to stockpile your points in Colorado.
And I think that's what makes Colorado so fun is, like, you're going to go there, and there's a chance, like, a 230 buck walks out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's just...
I mean, it's very unlikely, right? You can't go expect it, but there's always a chance.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, when I've hunted Colorado, it's that late season kind of rut hunts, and it just kind of feels a little magical that you have a rifle in your hand in November. And that's why it feels like maybe something special could happen. And like you said, it's so unlikely, but maybe that's why, versus like a Utah general where you're scouting your guts out all year and you're lucky to find a couple bucks over 180. But
yeah, and that place, I mean, it's a deer factory. Can you imagine if we hunted our general bucks in Utah in November
with a rifle
for 3 weeks straight?
Yeah.
We wouldn't have anything left.
Right. I know. I even get sick over those late muzzleloader hunts on general season units, and they only
want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
You run like the first week of November, but they're killing, like, I feel like every big buck that makes it through, they're getting killed on that late muzzle loader, and it breaks my heart. But then
feel bad for them.
Yeah. But
having said that, man, I'd take one of those tags right now.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. But that's crazy. So you guys kind of have it down. And one question I was going to ask you, and I always go back and forth on this, but do you think it's better to focus in on a unit, like we're talking Colorado here, we're out of state hunters in Colorado, like, are you focusing in on one unit, trying to learn the ins and outs, trying to learn the rutting grounds and just know it really good? Or are you kind of chasing units, maybe what's hot and what's not, or what's producing, or or looking for new areas, or how do you go about that?
Yeah, so a little bit of both. Maybe I shouldn't even say this, but I'll keep my points until I have exact amount for the unit I want to draw.
Uh-huh.
I have a specific unit in mind that I want to go to every year. And so I'll draw it every other year or every 2 years. And those in-between years that I won't draw it, I'll bounce around either for looking for a leftover tag or on the second draw, right? So I keep my points, but I still get the tag.
Yeah, smart.
On that second choice.
I know.
So I do bounce around a little bit because I'm just looking for any hunt I can do second choice and retain my points. But I do prefer one unit for sure, and knowing it really well has definitely paid off.
Yeah, yeah. I know that I always just go back and forth on that, but there's a few units that, especially if you've seen it happen in that unit or you've personally killed a big deer in a specific unit,
yeah,
it kind of holds a place in your heart, and you're like, I want to hunt that unit, but in Colorado, like we talked about, almost any unit can produce, so you can take second chance tags or
absolutely
turn back tags, but yeah. So before... I know you, so you're in Alaska right now. I don't know if we even said that, and maybe you don't want that out, but
no, you're good.
I don't want to take too much of your time. I know you have things to do, but before we ended, I just wanted to kind of pick your brain on Mexico a bit. You guide there and you've done it for 6 years now. There's just so much going on about Mexico. Like, can you tell us a little bit about the mule deer there? And you hear there's high fence and then not high fence, but is high fence, and how all that's going.
So unfortunately, Mexico, they are starting to get a lot more of the high fence stuff going. Everything we do is all free range. And Mexico, to be quite honest with you, it's gone downhill a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just because there's been a really bad drought and there's no more ground down there that isn't being hunted. You used to be able to find a ranch that, you know, hasn't been hunted in forever, and you go and do really well. But now it's like everything's getting hunted. We might pass a 190 buck on the first day, but he gets killed the next day by the guy across the fence, right?
Oh, so, yeah.
It's gone downhill a little bit, but it's gone downhill for Mexico standards. We're still killing several 200 inchers every single year. A lot of those 180s, 190 bucks. It's a blast. If you're about big deer, everybody needs to be in Mexico at least once.
And who do you guide for again out there?
MX Hunting Company.
Okay.
So we do mule deer, coos deer, and desert sheep.
Oh, sweet. Dang, that's cool. So you've been down there for 6 years now, and you always hear like these rumors about Mexico and what's going on with the deer, but how dangerous it is. Do you feel like it's gotten more dangerous, or are people just kind of nervous? Like, do you feel safe?
Yeah. I think personally people watch too many cartel movies.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never felt like in danger. Like, sure, you can go out and if you're looking for trouble, you'll find it. Don't get me wrong. But where we are, I mean, we pick you up at the airport and we take you straight to the camp, and you don't leave camp until the day you go home. So you have really no time to get into any trouble, barring some, you know, freak like accident that's never happened.
Yeah.
To me at least. So no, I feel super comfortable down there. The people down there, all of our help down there, they're salt of the earth people. Would trust them with anybody.
I see. I mean, that makes sense. I think everything's kind of always worse than makes everyone kind of makes it sound worse than what it actually is. And then yep. as far as deer, you have a client come in and you go pick them up. Like, what are your expectations there? Are you kind of mentioned it slightly. Like, are you looking for 190-inch deer? Can you kind of pass on young deer, or is it so competitive it's hard to let deer live because they're going to get killed by someone else, or how's that?
Yeah, on a couple of our ranches that we hunt down there, we have, I mean, it's like hundreds of thousands of acres continuous, so we can kind of manage it a lot more to our standards. And we might pass, you know, it all depends on the client, really. Some guys are absolutely stoked to shoot the first mid-180s buck they see. And others, I mean, you get guys going down there who are like, hey, I've killed a couple 200. I'm looking for 210.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hit and miss on the quality, just because everybody's expectations are a little different. I tell people, I'll tell them exactly what it is, and they can make the decision to pull the trigger or not. Obviously, we can't guarantee you a 200-inch deer. We can't even guarantee you a buck. I mean, it's fair chase hunting. Uh-huh. Mexico's funny. People think that there's big deer around every tree, but you might only see two bucks in a week, but one of those deer might be a 220-inch giant, and it makes it worth it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Mexico's always fascinated me.
I mean, I haven't hunted the strip. I can't imagine it's much different than the strip. I know you don't see a ton of deer down there, right?
Right, yeah. Just essentially low deer numbers, but genetics are crazy. So yeah. Probably super similar to that. Dang. Yeah, I don't know. It's just always fascinated me, but... That's cool. You've been there for so long and kind of seen, and so many places are just pumping high fence deer now. So to kind of hear how it actually is
out there. You can usually tell by a photo if it's high fence or not. It's too bad. I mean, I guess there's good money in it, but I have no desire to. It's just not my taste, right? Different strokes for different folks, I guess.
Yeah. And it's like we talked about with that Colorado buck, that big buck you saw. I think that's the part of giant mule deer that just kind of draws. Like, he lays his head down and lets someone walk by him at 5 yards because he knows that's like what he's done to survive, versus like a high fence deer. It has sweet antlers, awesome. Kind of how you can do that, but it's not
fun to look
at.
It's
not the same. It's not going to try to elude you like these wild deer do.
No, that's half the fun's when they get away and you got to make a game plan for the next day, right?
Right. I know. And I know you've chased deer year after year. And I think that's what's so fun is like, sometimes they get away and sometimes it's a multi-year process. And even when it's a multi-year process, sometimes they still get away. But if you killed every big buck you were after, I don't think it would be as fun.
It would get so boring, fun. Right?
Right, right.
When you do kill one after several years, it almost makes you sad. You're like, oh, I wish I could turn him back like a fish and hunt him again next year.
I know. I've been there. You finally get to put your hands on him, and it's so cool. But then you're like, he's gone. Like, I don't even know what to do with all my time now. Yeah. Like, I've spent so much time on this deer.
You got to start all over again.
Yeah, like between looking for sheds, trying to turn him back on the summer range or the winter range, and then he's just gone. But, yeah, it's interesting.
No, it's addicting, man. It's addicting.
So before we end here, is there just people are going to – hopefully when they listen to this, they're going on their rut hunts. Hopefully some people have some good tags. Is there any last-minute advice you would give people for hunting rutting deer?
Yeah, just don't quit, right? Don't give up. The last day usually is better than the first day. Just – cover country every day, never take the same road twice, and put yourself in a good position and make it count when you get the chance.
Yeah.
I'd say the biggest thing, just like your early season hunts, just don't quit. You're not going to kill one when you're driving home.
Right. And it's so easy, especially if it gets cold and you're not seeing numbers. And you're like, man, I just wish I was with my family.
Oh, yeah. When the girlfriend's knocking on your door, or kids are sick or whatever, you just want to go home and you just got to stick with it.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, especially in these late season hunts, it's only going to get better. People start going home or fill their tags. And a lot of times those last 2 days can be so good because there's not as many people in the field. The rut's starting to heat up even more, and it could be special, and it just takes one deer to make a mistake or show itself.
I mean, I don't know how often you've done this, but you go home from a hunt early, you feel sick the whole drive home. It's like once you finally get home and you're comfortable again, you wish you were still out there.
Oh, yeah. I've done that before, and you're just like, man, I'm such a sissy. Like, why did I go home? It wasn't nearly as bad as you thought it was, and I never want to feel that again. I did that once. I never want to do that again.
Never. Nope. Stay out there.
Yeah. Well, that's perfect, Kobe. Thanks for taking the time to do this, especially when you're in Alaska. I hope you can kill, and then I guess maybe if you're going back to Colorado or whatever, we'll keep in touch.
Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for listening again. I really appreciate it. Don't forget about our giveaway with the big guys. Go on to dirtygiantshop.com. The link's on our Instagram if you can't find it. I appreciate you guys listening. I think there's a lot to take from Kobe, and hear some of his stories was really cool. Anyways, before we end, I just want to give a quick shout out to one of the sponsors of our podcast, Dark Energy. I use them on a few of my hunts this year, and their power bank and their solar panel is just so handy to have, and it's gear that you can depend upon. And it's not good to go out. It's not like a Chinese version of it where you're not sure if it's going to work. It's dependable and it comes in handy when you really need it. I'm heading out right now to Colorado third season. I got a deer tag up there and I'm going to try to do some podcasts from the field, just kind of maybe try to almost like take you guys along and give you updates. And I thought it'd be kind of fun for me to look back on and kind of see how everything turned out. So hopefully we'll have a couple of those out soon. I'm just leaving now, so hopefully I have some stories and eventually a big buck. Thanks again for listening.